Shalom, welcome to another episode of Inspiration from Zion. I'm Jonathan Feldstein, and I have the privilege of being your host, coming to you from the Judean Mountains here in Israel. I like to refer to it as the original Bible Belt. Inspiration from Zion is a program of the Genesis 123 Foundation, whose mission is to build bridges between Jews and Christians with Israel in ways that are new, unique, and meaningful. I pray that you will find this, all of those. Through this program, we're excited to connect you to people and stories in and relating to Israel to give you a window to look through, experiencing aspects of life here that you might not otherwise know about. We want this to be interactive, so please be in touch with us at inspirationfromzion@gmail.com and send along any questions and any comments about any topic anytime. Or you can reach us at genesis123.co or follow and like Inspiration from Zion on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Stay tuned until the end, where we're also going to share an exciting opportunity, and please feel free to share this with others who will also find it of interest. Today, we're offering you something in case you missed. On May 15th this year, we hosted the Global Prayer for Israel. This is a tremendous event, huge amount of work and infrastructure with people praying for Israel over 6 hours from all around the world. Dozens of countries, I lost count, in many different languages from every continent except Antarctica. And we were praying then for the hostages, for the safety and success of the IDF, and to change the hearts of God's enemies, of our enemies here in Israel. And I want to share with you one segment of that today, which I think is particularly relevant and unfortunately still very necessary. And I hope that you'll find it interesting, informative, inspiring, meaningful, and will enable you to take a pause during the middle of listening and follow this and take a break and pray along with us and continue to do so, because we definitely, definitely continue to need your prayers.
Okay, shalom everybody. First of all, welcome and thank you for being here and being on time. Special thanks to our panel, who I will be introducing. We may have one more person joining. And then we have someone else who will be joining toward the end as well. I'm Jonathan Feldstein. I'm the president of the Genesis 123 Foundation. Our mission is to build bridges between Jews and Christians with Israel in ways that are new, unique, and meaningful. This program, the Inspiration from Zion webinar, was the predecessor 4 years ago to the Inspiration from Zion podcast, which I have the privilege of hosting on the Charisma podcast network as the only Orthodox Jew among 300 or so other Christian podcast hosts. We do this and all of our programs from our respective traditions, that of Jews and Christians, and with mutual respect. And I always say that because I think this is also a reasonably mixed audience, and people will be following and listening on the podcast. Jews shouldn't be bothered and offended by Christians speaking as Christians, and vice versa. And we should be able to speak openly about our perspectives, but also understand and disagree as friends. I don't think this is a conversation so much about disagreeing. I think this is a conversation, and I hope it will be the catalyst for something very big as we continue to push a project called, correctly, the Solution for Peace in Gaza. And I will remind people, hopefully during the course of this conversation, and certainly at the end, if I have the presence of mind, where if you want more information and to be in touch with us, go to solutionforpeaceingaza.com. We are trying to get everyone to register there so we can figure out who's volunteering, who's interested, who's going to plunk down $1 million to help make it happen, and things of that nature. But we need to create, as I refer to in my article that was in the Jerusalem Post this week, an army of Christians going in. And I know that has a military suggestion. That's not the intent. But we're going to reform Gaza, God willing, from the inside by bringing an army of Christians from the outside. Let me just give a little bit of background before I introduce our guests. Based on what's been a tremendous growing interest and need in this topic, at least as an alternative solution, but I would argue as the only solution for peace in Gaza, I decided to open this conversation up with friends, people whose counsel and input I respect tremendously, open it up as a webinar to have live participation and be able to have questions from dozens of others who are also joining from around the world. For those of us who are here live, please do send your questions and comments using the Q&A feature. And for those of you following on the Inspiration from Zion podcast, stay in touch with us. Go to solutionforpeaceingaza.com and stay in touch with us, because you probably want to get on our email list if you're not already, to be able to be invited to participate in live programs like this. Now, by full disclosure, I wrote an edgy article some months ago, followed by one that was widely published in advance in the U.S. of Prime Minister Netanyahu's speech in Congress, and then one that was published this week in the Jerusalem Post. And the nature of the edgy article is, the Jerusalem Post changed the title. Essentially, I say off the cuff, but truly, the solution for peace in Gaza is Jesus. And what that means is the initial article was really meant to undermine the failed concept and truly dangerous idea of a two-state solution, especially as being used in recent months, reflectively, somewhat as a myth that if only the Palestinian Arabs had a state, everything would be a walk in the park and peace could break out tomorrow. Other than it being a concept that's unfortunately failed for decades, that most Palestinian Arabs don't want and their leaders don't want, and even if they wanted, arguably they have no leaders who could implement it in a reliable way. It's a great idea, with one exception, that now, today, 10 months after the Hamas massacre on October 7th, reflexively rewarding Palestinian Arab terror unilaterally by creating a state not only will not work, but actually it will be a terrible model to pursue. And especially now, and especially unilaterally without any negotiations. So just to be clear, these are my words and thoughts. I'm going to unleash the panelists shortly to share their own thoughts and ideas, but I do not project putting words in their mouths. That's why I invited them. Since writing about the solution for peace in Gaza, the more I think about it, even though it was initially intended just to be very edgy, I realized that not only is it a viable solution, but it's really the only solution. There could be many people speaking on this topic, and I know many others, some who are observing here, would like to do so. The panelists here are friends whose input, whose counsel this year has been invaluable, and who I trust to have a truly open and honest dialogue about the plan and with whom I've spoken about it. So I don't intend this conversation as a slight for anybody who has input. We're just beginning the conversation now. But the core of the idea, as I said earlier, is to bring an army of Christians to completely restore Gaza, through which to influence the society there, to embrace peace and prosperity, and reject the radical Islam and hate and terror that's been inbred there for so many decades. With some of the people who have been part of the conversation traveling, I really wasn't sure who'd be joining us today, so I didn't introduce anybody by name in the invitation that people received. Let me introduce the three panelists, and I'm glad, I would have loved for all of them to participate, but I'm glad it's these three, and you'll see why momentarily. Alphabetically, Marzi Amirizadeh is an Iranian-born Christian who was arrested and sentenced to death in Iran 15 years ago for having converted to Christianity. She's an author and an international public speaker. John Enerson is a Swedish theologian living here in Israel and serves with Cry for Zion, helping Christians understand their history with the Temple Mount and how it relates to biblical theology and the Jewish people. And Dr. Victoria Sarvati is an author, teacher, Hebraic scholar who's spoken at conferences and appeared widely in the media across the U.S. and around the world. And she is co-founder of the Nathaniel Foundation. So Victoria and Marzi and John, I'm just looking at the screen, not alphabetical order anymore. First of all, welcome and thank you for being part of this. And I'm excited about it because this is going to be a very open-ended conversation where I'm kind of nudge you and have you take us in directions that we that we don't necessarily yet know where we're going to go. But all of you, each of you and others, had really been pivotal in the last almost 6 months since God gave me this idea and gave me the Yiddish word, the chutzpah, to actually write about it. You've been friendly counsel, encouraging, and I'm grateful for that. But I want to talk about it through your voices today. I want to talk about why this is so important, why Jonathan, your friend, has promoted something that you think is valuable. So I just want to put out there first in a very broad way and ask anyone to respond, why is this the solution? Why should we even be having this conversation now? Victoria, I see you moving in. Are you ready?
It's really a question that I'd like to have you answer. And because you have obviously seen something in Christians, probably in the last, 5 years or so, that you didn't see before, that has motivated you to think in this manner. What was it that you're seeing in the Christian community that has prompted you?
I told you in the outset of our conversations, I don't want to be the leader on this, but I'll tell you. I know I'm teasing.
To establish this.
Fair enough. Why even me? Okay. First of all, I don't know. God does crazy things sometimes, and he gave me a strong tap on the shoulder and downloaded the idea, which I had the privilege of putting into pen to paper, so to speak. My going back building bridges with Christians is most of 2 decades. And certainly that's matured, it's grown, it's tremendous. And I have unbelievable respect for Christians and Christianity. And I see things in Christians and Christianity that make me better as a Jew, that we as the Jewish people can learn from, and that make the world a better place. And the converse is true as well. So really, truly, when given this idea and the task to put it on paper, so to speak, I thought I was simply writing something to undermine the two-state solution. And we had this conversation in your house back in the winter when I was there. And I'll never forget Paul picking up his phone and Googling who's in charge of Gaza now and according to the United Nations, and everyone in the room encouraging me to pursue it, not realizing that I think that I had stumbled on not a good solution, but the solution. And, you know, someone can look at me and my profile. I'm an Orthodox Jew. I live in Judea. I'm a settler, and the image of an Israeli settler is someone who's right-wing and extremist and doesn't care about our Arab neighbors. And I'm the opposite of that. I don't know that that's an accurate stereotype, but I'm the opposite of that. And my goodness, I mean, Marzi, you've been in my home, and John, you've been around the corner. Who is joining? Who's that? Someone joining is Victoria. Okay. Okay, Clint, we're gonna keep you on mute right now. So we live closer to a Palestinian Arab village than any of the communities along the Israeli border with Gaza were close or are close to their Palestinian Arab neighbors who attacked them on October 7th. And I really truly believe that Gaza, this is just going to be a test case, but Gaza can be rebuilt. It must be rebuilt. There are more than 2 million people there. And as somebody, I don't know if a friend from Singapore has joined yet, but she and I were chatting the other day, Gaza could be a Singapore. And as I was said, I'm just going to say this last thing. It's kind of a funny line, but I used it on the interview I just gave with a South African radio station. My dream is to go about 45 miles that way to the west one day and be able to drive an hour and a half to the beach in Gaza and get a kosher hamburger. That will be the sign of success. But I think the actual solution is you, y'all. I don't have a better solution. I don't think there's a better solution. And I believe that this needs to be pursued.
Well, I think you're onto something, and I think that most Christians would agree that this is something that they would be motivated to do, because we're told to go and spread good news to the nations, and of course we know there's Israel, and then there's the nations, and of course Gaza now would be, I guess, considered the nations, even though it's technically a part of Israel. They are not Israelis; they're not Jews. And so this is something that we feel that we're mandated to do, and to spread good news and to spread the love of Yeshua, of course, which is a different ideology that is obviously there in Gaza. So I just wanted to set that as a precedent, your motivation and what you recognized in the Christian community or within the Christian people, the true believers in Yeshua, what our desire is.
I think the operative words and what you very important what you just said, that the operative words are true believers, because it whoever is going to implement this also has to vet that out. Who are the 100,000 people who are going to go? Let me use that as a segue. Marzi, you were just here for your second visit. On your last day, we went down to the Gaza border together. I was there again yesterday. I get choked up just thinking about it. It's 10 months. There's still 115 people. And we heard standing there, we heard artillery shells being fired into Gaza. We saw cities in Gaza with the naked eye. You have a unique experience. You grew up in Iran. You were you're too young to remember the Islamic Revolution because your whole life was under the Ayatollahs. What appeals to you as a Christian, but through your prism of having interacted as a Christian for so much of your life in Iran?
Jonathan, first of all, I would like to thank you for having me and allowing me to share my personal experiences, and you and a few other people may know my story, that I grew up in Iran, which is a Islamic country ruled by radical Muslims, and who are the major problem, and they are the supporter of all these terrorists, Hamas, Hezbollah, Houthis, and they are creating more terrorist groups in different parts of the world. And I always mention that they are the major problem of this issue. And definitely Islam is another issue, because I grew up in Islam. I learned about this theology and their teachings at schools from my childhood. And all I can share is my personal experiences and about what is Islam and how we can approach Muslim with the message of love and salvation. If you know my personal experience, that how I converted to Christianity, definitely I heard from someone, but it started with dreams. And it was more than 20 years ago that I converted to Christianity. I gave my heart to Jesus, but that didn't happen just because, you know, someone came to me and wanted to convert me to something. I had my personal experiences with Jesus, walking with him and learning the truth and reading the Bible. Reading Bible opened my eyes to the truth, because radical Muslims, the way that they do things is through lying to people. And there are many lies that they, through Islam, they give to people. For example, you know that they teach, one of their teachings is America is the big Satan, Israel is the small Satan, and these are our enemies. That's all their teachings. The teachings about Islam is that God, you cannot have a personal relationship with him. It's all about punishment. It's all about creating fear in people, not to get close to God, not to understand that they can have a personal relationship with him. And creating fear among Muslims. And when I talk to many Muslims, most of them, they don't have even knowledge about Islam. And I'm sure there are similarities between Iran and Gaza. I can share my experience in Iran, approaching thousands of Iranians. But I'm glad that you, as an Orthodox Jew, understood that Jesus is the only solution for Gaza. And I wanted to emphasize that Jesus, we know as Christians that Jesus is the only solution to the whole world. But now we are focusing on Muslims, and I would be happy to share my experiences why this is important.
As remarkable and miraculous as Israel is, and its very existence a testimony to God's faithfulness, in many ways, Israel's like most other countries. Just as there are parents anywhere who have stronger and weaker parenting abilities, and adults become a product of situations in their lives that they cannot control, making their ability to raise and care for their own children even harder, that's true in Israel as well. The Genesis 1-2-3 Foundation is committed and takes the mandate seriously to care for the least of these, our brothers, our children. We're committed to bless and strengthen orphans and at-risk youth, to invest in them, to empower them, so that their future will be brighter than their past or their present. But Israel is unique in that there are always threats of war and terror which know no bounds. For children who come from homes that are not safe, sometimes the very scary reality of living in a community that's not safe is too much to bear. We are committed to turning orphans and at-risk youth into children of promise. We fund a variety of programs to help those most in need as widely as we can. We invite and encourage you to join us today so that we can ensure their brighter tomorrow. Please visit genesis123.co to find out more and to send your love and most generous donation today.
I'm just curious, when we were down on the Gaza border, we went into Kibbutz Be'eri, which is where I was yesterday. We were in Sderot. We overlooked Gaza. We went to the site of the Nova Music Festival, all right on the Gaza border. And I'm just thinking it now for the first time. This is arguably the closest you were to an Islamic authoritarian regime since you left Iran. How did you have any? It was sad there, but did you have any trauma that you were experiencing there? You were spent a lot of time comforting Israelis, the family members of some hostages, and we had that lovely tour in the kibbutz with the woman who survived. But was there any kind of PTSD that you experienced that you remember?
Yeah, thank you so much for mentioning that, Jonathan. You know, in my first trip in Israel, we visited Yad Vashem, and it was there that when I was seeing all those brutality that happened, you know, during Holocaust, that was where that I could feel connected to the pains and sufferings of Jews, because I experienced, not at that level, but I experienced the brutality of this regime in my whole life living in Iran. And in my second trip, definitely when we went to those communities, seeing all those brutalities, how they killed thousands of Israelis, Jews, I read it, but seeing, being in the actual place and seeing all those brutalities is different. And for someone like me, that, as I mentioned, I experienced firsthand this brutality in my life in prison, I could feel that connection that we are fighting against the same enemy. And I wanted to mention that, you know, Israel is fighting to a war, fighting terrorists. Definitely, we should eliminate those terrorists who are possessed by demons. Our prayers as Christians is that everyone to God change their hearts and to repent. But this is, I believe, this is God's justice. But we as Christians, I believe, we are a different army of God, and our battle is different. And yeah, we are part of His army, and our fight is through going to people, sharing the love of God with these people. Yeah, definitely that, you know, when I was there, there were many times that I could not hold my tears, because I could feel it, that this kind of brutality, that how savagely they killed, murdered many people.
Yeah.
And I experienced in prison that they executed my friends, they killed my husband. There are many stories that I can share with people.
I'll be glad to publicize all of your books. But while we're talking about that and your story, Marzi, I do want to encourage. I've read your second book twice and your first book once, but the second book, A Love Journey with God, is available at your website, marzisjourney.com. And I know you didn't come on to promote that, but I'm so inspired by it
Thank
as an
you.
Orthodox Jew. I want to encourage everyone else to get it. John, I want to ask you the same question because you and I stumbled into a conversation about this. I didn't know your father has been going around talking about the plan that I wrote I'm trying to find the nice word, marketing it on my behalf, which is lovely, but I don't want it to be on my behalf. But before I do, and this is something I want you to address why this is the solution, because you were super animated in that conversation that you and I had 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. I'm getting fabulous input on all of these articles. Most are in concurrence, Jews and Christians, that this is a solid plan and we should pursue it. There's some negativity from Jews and from Christians. And even there's one person, someone from South Africa, who's been writing to me very harsh that no, there's no hope, there's no solution. They're Arabs, they're Muslims, they should all be killed. So my question to you is not only why is this the solution that you got excited about, but you live here for a lot of time, most of your life, I think. And, is it viable? Is there anything that's really viable? Or is this person who's writing to me that there's no hope and we should just destroy them?
No, I think there's definitely hope, but it can't be unrealistic. We've seen the dangers of unrealistic hope on October 7th with unrealistic expectations about the nature of humanity and of ideology, of fundamental Islamist ideology, jihadism. So we can't be naive, but I do believe there's hope. I'm honored to be on the panel. I do want to say I don't have my degree yet, so I'm a Bible teacher and a theology student, but not a theologian yet.
In my book,
But
you're a theologian.
I've been living in Israel for the majority of my life as a Christian, doing ministry. I've done ministry all my life growing up. But I was here on October 7th, and all the rockets were falling, and our kids and my wife were in the bomb shelter. And since that day, we were praying. And it became fairly quick in our prayers. I don't know if it was the first day, but probably from the second onwards, that we were praying about really the root of the problem is the Islamist ideology. And I think you are completely right. And I think there's a lot of Christians around the world who understand this problem, completely agree that this is the only solution. And there's a number of reasons. So you correctly identify the root of the problem is the Islamist ideology of the Muslim Brotherhood or any other flavor thereof. I remember the pullout from Gaza 2005. They were probably kids in Gaza who later grew up and on October 7th slaughtered a bunch of people. And what can deal with that Islamist ideology? Are jihadists in Gaza going to abandon it for a Western progressive message? I don't think so. I don't think they're attracted by it. Are Jews interested in changing their hearts in some sort of way? I don't think Judaism is really equipped to address such an issue. And it's also very painful for Jews who are the victims of this attack. I don't see how that relationship would function. So there's not some sort of progressive Western gospel that can help them. There's not, Jews are generally not equipped to be able to, and Jews are not interested in making more Jews in Gaza, but they wish, obviously, that Arabs would live in peace with Jews in this land. So then it leaves having who can counter the ideology that's there. You also pointed out what Netanyahu outlined in his speech to Congress, the historic speech. And there were two areas. He talked about demilitarization and de-radicalization. Israel's doing the part of demilitarization. They're taking care of the security issue. And like he said, for the foreseeable future, Israel will have to take care of security and demilitarization. But who is going to do the de-radicalization? I don't even see that the state of Israel would be capable of implementing schools for Arabs in Gaza to do this kind of thing. So who's going to take care of the aid? Who's going to take care of the education? Who's it going to be? And another thing that I was thinking of, yeah, and I do believe that there are Gazans who want to leave. It's sick that the world wants to force Gazan civilians to stay in a war zone against their will. There are people who want to leave, but not everybody's going to leave and not everyone can leave. It's a pipe dream to think that they can all disappear. That's not going to happen. There's going to be Gazans there, and they need to get rid of the radicalization, the Islamist ideology. So what is the only answer? The only answer is the love and message that Christians have to counter, defeat that ideology, to present a better idea that can result in a change of heart. And that starts with doing aid and education. So I think the first thing that policymakers, because this ball is in Israel's court. Israel tried to hand it off to the autonomy of Palestinian Arabs in Gaza to run themselves. That's not going to happen.
You're talking about, just so people who don't have the historical perspective, when Israel unilaterally disengaged from Gaza in 2005, that was, okay, guys, take care of yourself.
Yeah. That resulted in incredible militarization, right? And a disaster to allow jihadist ideology to just spring wild. Are the actors around Israel? Now they're talking, Netanyahu is meeting with different policymakers in the Arab world. They have proved to be a disaster. They've just enabled the Muslim Brotherhood in Gaza. That's not the solution. So the ball is in Israel's court. And my prayer is that the think tank that you've started this policy is that, first of all, give the aid and the education and responsibility to good-hearted evangelical Christian organizations and people. First of all, give that to them, because that can start, like you pointed out, those type of Christians love both Israel and Arabs in Gaza.
Yeah.
So they are able to do it. Secondly, they are immune to the jihadist takeover, whether it's the UN or Western progressive aid organizations or jihadist or Islamist aid organizations going there. They're immune to that takeover, right? So they're not going to get, God willing, corrupted in their help. It's going to be a pure help to help with the aid, with the humanitarian relief work. And it's not unheard of in the Muslim world for Muslim kids to go to Christian schools, to go to Christian education. Many of them do. Many of them do. There's precedence for this. So I don't see why it would be so unacceptable to accept neutral Christian aid work and help and education. I mean, and we know the disaster of lending it to the Western international powers like the UN or to Qatar or something else like that. I mean, we just saw proof. What was it this week?
Egypt, you know, Egypt is
has
a few tunnels going under the border that have been, whether publicly or surreptitiously, been supplying a vast amount of arms and money. So no, you're right.
As I understood it, Sisi's son was in charge of intelligence at the border to Gaza, and just basically had it as a money making machine with tons of tunnels in and out for whoever could pay the most.
Right.
So it's obviously Israel has to take the responsibility, but Israel doesn't want to be educating that demographic being in that
position.
But doesn't
want the responsibility to, right. And this goes back to the conversation, Victoria, we had back in your house that Saturday night in the winter. And it really struck me, because I thought it was ridiculous when Paul took his phone and Googled it and said, no, Israel is the victorious power. Israel has the responsibility. And he didn't mean it in a bad way. He's like, here, wow, it's an opportunity. And I thought, oh, ridiculous, because we don't need that. But that started moving in my mind. That was a part of a pivotal part of that conversation. Did you want to add anything, Victoria? I saw you looking down, reading.
Yeah, well, I'm writing notes as the conversation continues. But yeah, I agree. Obviously, Israel is sovereign, and that was one question that I had even on that day. What type of legalities are concerned with, you know, with this movement and Christians coming in Israeli sovereign territory? Is that going to fare well with the government? And then I wanted to, and if you may have the answers to that, I don't know, or maybe we're continuing to find out these answers, but I also wanted to just reflect a little bit on what Marcy said. I was just in Gaza, not in Gaza. I was on the Gaza envelope, back in, end of May, first part of June, and, was there with a tour that we took that was more of a, it was more of a solidarity tour that we wanted to come and just, you know, give Israel a hug in so many different ways. You know, we visited the kibbutzim down there. We went to Sderot. We went to the Hadassah hospital. We just went everywhere. Tel Aviv, you know, the hostage centers, just to connect and understand the depth and the veracity of what happened. And I have to say, when we were in Sderot, we could hear artillery fire, tank fire from where we stood. And I wasn't one bit moved by it. I wasn't fearful. I wasn't afraid. And I talked to the others that were with me. Nobody had that sense of foreboding or of fear. I really feel like whenever the Lord goes before you, when he's called you to do something, he gives you that he equips you with all that you need, even courage and fortitude, and you pursue what you're going to go to do, and you don't stop until you accomplish it. And so just in that little moment, being right on the border and feeling the peace of God that says you're exactly where you're supposed to be, and hold these people in your arms, hug them, encourage them, pray with them, pray for the peace of Israel, and reverse the curses that have been spoken. We did these very things, believing that this is what God called us to do. And I believe that even in the midst of going into Gaza itself, there will be that same calling, that same summons, that same feeling of God is with me in the presence, goes before me. And I have to tell you, it was supernatural. My natural mind wondered, why am I not concerned? Why am I not fearful? Why am I not, you know, listening to the people back at home? They're saying, why are you there? You know, but I didn't feel that fear. And so, and I say that to project this into the future, when Christians will go in and help these people in so many ways, psychologically, spiritually, mentally, and physically, I believe, in some sense, that you will have this feeling of calling, and you can't not do it.
So, okay, thank you for that. It actually leads to an area that I want to go, to segue on a few things. John, I want to raise a subject that, John, you touched upon, which is why not Jews? I have my own answers, but you said Jews are not equipped, and I want you to perhaps unpack that. But some of the feedback, the negative feedback I've gotten to this proposal and sharing my recent Jerusalem Post article and the plan, is that no, the Jewish people are the light unto the nations. We should be going in and changing society. And I mean, frankly, that's even more far afield right now, because they've been inbred to hate us. And we saw that on October 7th. So I'm having a hard time seeing how we can go set up a Chabad of Gaza City and a Chabad of Khan Yunis and create Jewish pockets. And by the way, there are no shortage of Israelis, left-wing and right-wing. Yesterday, I was in the former home of one of the preeminent left-wing peace activists at Kibbutz Be'eri, whose home was burned after her body was slaughtered. I don't want to be more graphic than that. So why not the Jews? But then I also want to segue and just ask you all to discuss it. You know, how will Arabs and Muslims accept it? I'll just lead into that by saying, you know better about Marzi specifically, John probably, maybe Victoria, I don't know, in terms of how Islam looks at Jesus. But I said in a, it was an interview I did somewhere recently, I said, you know what? Maybe they would truly accept it, the Arab states and even the Gazans, because they realize how much they failed and they don't want to have continued failure. But I'd like your comments. I just kind of said a lot. Any response to any of that in any order? John, you're nodding. Marzi?
I can start off by saying that I've had a lot of conversations with a lot of religious Jews over the past decade or so. And I think all of them have been very proud of not, that Judaism doesn't try to convince anybody of any ideology ever, generally speaking. So there's just not, at the same time, we've had an experience as Christians of sharing our perspective of a Jewish book and Jewish values. It's a Jewish message that we're sharing. But with the whole world, we have about 2,000 years of experience of sharing that with different nations and shifting ideology, changing hearts, and being willing to do so in love. Like you wrote in your article that, you know, Christians have a tradition of going to some of the most dangerous and inhospitable places in the world to show their love and uplift communities. And also, yes, we can be a neutral partner. It's very difficult for the hurts that the Jewish people have and for the animosity that the Muslims of Gaza have, to be able to come in as a Christian and say, there's a better way. We're just going to love on you, and you can hate us all you want, but we're going to show love in action, and it can change hearts. And those are Christians who love Israel and also are willing to love Gazans.
Friends, Israel's at war, and the war may get worse before it gets better, much worse. It's going to be a long war because the enemy is the epitome of evil. It's not just a matter of overcoming troops on a battlefield, but overcoming a theology, an ideology, an evil one. While the Genesis 123 Foundation has been overwhelmed with the support of so many donations to the Israel Emergency Campaign, there's so much more that needs to be done. We've invested your donations that we've received so far strategically to make the biggest impact possible, whether helping with soldiers and their equipment and personal needs, to providing civilian security for outlying border communities, to relocating and settling several families from near the Gaza war zone, launching the global petition drive to support Israel in the face of pressure for a ceasefire and long-term needs for at-risk children, traumatized now more than ever before. Please take a moment to pause this conversation right now and go to love.genesis123.co and donate generously. We value your trust, and we will keep all donors informed about how and where your donations are being used to contribute to make the biggest impact possible. And when you use that link, love.genesis123.co, you can also send your prayers and words of encouragement to Israelis of all backgrounds, just sending your love, something that we need so desperately. Thank you, and God bless you and your loved ones.
Marzi, Victoria, anything you want to add to that?
Yes, I would like to say that I agree with you, Jonathan, that through my experience living in Iran, I know the teaching is all the time is about that Jews, Christians, all of them are infidels. It doesn't matter. In the eyes of radical Muslims, we all are infidels and their enemy. And that's important that, Christians definitely, they can go and share the message of love with those people, but we need to defeat these lies. For example, when I became a Christian, it was through reading Bible that opened my eyes, that I understood that Jews are the chosen people of God. And these are the nation of God, that God loves them. And definitely Israel, Jerusalem is the land of my Savior. And it opened my eyes to many truths. And we should definitely, through teaching, through educating, John mentioned through education. This is very important because for many years, they brainwashed these people with Islamic lies. And gave them the lies, and we need to tell people the truth that Israel people are not your enemy. Like Iranians, for many years they didn't know, and praise God, now their eyes are opened, and they are keep saying that Israel, America, they are not our enemies, and you are our enemies. And definitely Jews can show that as well, like, you know, the way that the Christians show their love to new people. And it's not just limited to Christians, because Jewish people are the neighbor of these people, and these people should change. We need to change that lens of looking at Israel, looking at Christian people as infidels. We need to change that lens that they are looking at these people. Yeah, I agree with you that it's just true education, true defeating these lies. And I believe, you know, John mentioned about the militarization that IDF are doing that, but we our focus is on de-radicalization, which I think this is harder than the first one.
Yes.
Because it's a long-term project.
Yes,
it's a big project, and we need to have a strategy. But different kinds of a strategy, how to approach these people.
Thank you. Victoria?
Well, first of all, you said it a while ago, you have been the victims, and they are the aggressors. So how can the victims go in and change the aggressors in any way, shape, or form? You need an advocate. And what Christians are advocates for you. They are the ones that come in and can tell the extremist that, you know, you guys are a joy. You're the chosen people. There's a sense of connecting, a connectivity to the Bible. And we have that. We've also been considered lights as the Jewish people have come into the nations and they have de-radicalized us. Not that we were against the Jews, but we were, you know, sacrificing our children and, you know, participating in, you know, temple orgies and things of this nature in the nations. Okay. So we were off on the deep end, but it was the Jewish people that came in and spread the light of the God of Israel to us, and through Yeshua, the word of Yeshua, the message of Yeshua. And there was a de-radicalization in the nation. So now we have several billion people that now have come from that movement of the light spreading into the nations. And so we carry that same torch. And it's the torch that says that the God of Israel, he is God. And these are his chosen people. And this is his land that he has put his name upon. And he wants to bless you through them. You know, there's a means by which all nations can be blessed. And that is by blessing Israel, blessing Abraham's children, blessing Abraham's land. It's the means by which all the world, God, you know, God wasn't only thinking of the Hebrew people whenever he made that covenant with Abraham. He told him, and through you, and through the blessing of those who bless you, all the nations will also be blessed. We can come into this same covenant with God, because whoever is a friend of Abraham is a friend of God's. That's what covenant is. And so when we befriend Abraham and his children and the land and the nation, then we are literally coming into covenant, at least in the direction and from the direction of being a friend of Abraham. And of course, we understand that covenant to go even deeper into the ratification of that covenant through Yeshua. But regardless, we are believers in the covenant that God has made with the land and with the people. And so if that message can also be relayed to those in the nations, the Gazans, I think that they also will see a light.
Excellent. That is great. Yeah, go ahead.
And there's one other thing. As far as how do they see Yeshua?
you know, they, I think they see him quite positively. You know, he's a part of the Quran. He's a, known as a prophet. Even some of them might even say that he is, could be the Messiah even. There's this possibility that they toy around with this idea. And so I, and also with the very fact that, you know, we look at Joel of the dreams and visions that will come to young men and old men, and I believe women as well, that we're seeing this. I've actually spoken to a Muslim man at a particular event, and he, the Lord just impressed upon me before I went to this event that I was going to meet a Muslim man and that I was to share with him the love of the Lord. And so I was waiting, you know, I mean, I wasn't, you know, other than just the fact that he told me that, I mean, I was just sitting there waiting for it. And I was in a counseling situation and a man came in and sat down and he had a family with him. And so I asked him, I said, do you have any church affiliation, you know, any spiritual, you know, beliefs? He goes, I'm a Muslim. And of course, immediately my antennas went up and I said, okay, you know, that this must be the one. And so I just asked him, I said, let me ask you a question, Jonathan. I said, have you had any dreams about Jesus, Yeshua? And he says, yes. His eyes got really big. He said, yes, I have. And he seemed so excited that I asked him about this dream. And I said, can you tell me the dream? And so he proceeded to tell me that, you know, Jesus gave him a scroll in the dream and he told him to read it. And he says he opened it up, but it was in another language and he couldn't understand it. And I said, well, I believe what that scroll was the New Testament, because this is what these are stories about who he is. And I said, would you like to have a copy of this in a language you can understand? And he says, yes. And so I did. I gave him a copy of the New Testament. And then I asked him, I said, would you like for me to pray for you? And he immediately grabbed his children's hands and he bowed his head. Wow. And I led him in prayer, he and his entire family. Wow. And so I just know that God controlled that and engineered the whole event to let me even know that it was going to happen. And then he was so receptive. So the planting, the fertile ground was already being created before this man ever sat down. So I believe that definitely God is in orchestrating all of this and is doing all the work ahead of time so that those who come in can harvest a great harvest.
Thank you. You know what? I want to make an observation because I was going to say it anyway. And Victoria, you just mentioned his dream and asking him about that. Marzi, I'm not going to get into your dreams, but and people can get your book, which is profound at how you explain how Jesus showed himself to you in your dreams, which you explain very simply, shows how I read and pay attention to your book, that in Iran, you can't just turn on Daystar and watch someone preaching, but you have to have other vehicles for God to present himself. And we've also seen, and Victoria, I think you and I have discussed this, what seems like a surge in Gazans acknowledging that they've been having dreams about Jesus. So yeah, I just want to put that out there. We're running out of time. I intended to keep this to about an hour. I think we're going to go a little bit over. And I think that that's fine because in successful programs, you always want to leave people wanting more. The problem is I think we're going to leave people wanting a lot too more. I want to come back to all of you with one kind of wrap-up question, but I want to acknowledge some of the questions that are coming in first. So there's some questions that are being asked that we just don't know the answers to, because as Josh Collins wrote, this will be pioneering work. How will you select the people to be involved in the remarkable project? Well, we don't know yet. This is the beginning. We're trying to create the foundation, get the soil fertile so we can sow the seeds and get the foundation moving. The same thing on a practical basis. Lorraine, what's the practical basis? Yes, we want to bring Christians to live, work among the Gazans, physically rebuild. I'll send a link to the article again that I wrote, but talking about not just volunteering in schools and hospitals, but rebuilding the schools and hospitals and being the teachers and being the medical staff, really integrating. Maybe 100,000 people is not enough, but it'll be a good start. George, you've asked a couple of good questions. We will provide the list of the panelists and their websites, books, social media that you can connect with. And also you suggested Samaritan's Purse and other Christian aid organizations. I'll tell you this, that I know firsthand that Franklin Graham did receive a copy of my article and was generally receptive. Someone asked if Jewish organizations could go in and work side by side to take in Gaza. Maybe yes, maybe that's an answer. But these are all parts of the bigger questions. I think it's safe to say that there are more questions for which we do not have answers than questions that we do have answers. But it's the beginning. And by the way, let me say this, but I want to come back to the panelists. But sometimes I get really caught up in these conversations and I forget to say some things. At the risk of that, please, everybody today, if you haven't done it already, go to solutionforpeaceingaza.com and register. Join us. You'll get other junk emails that I send out. Don't be offended. Don't delete them. But this is our way of communicating with you to find out who has ideas. What can we share? Where are we going to be able to put ministries together? So I do want to ask you to do that. And I want you to take, when I send it out, I want you to take my article and I want you to take the link to the website and share it widely. Share it on your social media and share it, not because I'm so great. We've already established that. It's just the idea that was given to me. But share it so we can create top down and bottom up conversations so we can have all of this. And then the last question that I'll address, someone anonymous asked, under whose authority? Well, the words used, take over Gaza. I don't know that we're looking to take over Gaza. We're looking to restore and rehabilitate Gaza. And rehabilitate is actually not the accurate word, because Gaza never was a thriving society. We're looking to restore and build Gaza. And I do believe to create the Singapore so I can drive an hour and a half and get a kosher hamburger down there. Let's come back. I want to... One general last question for the three of you, and then I'm going to bring up Deanna. You and I have been chatting on the side. If you'd like to make a few comments, I'd love to have you on. Your background is unique and worth bringing on for sure. But also I'm going to bring on Rabbi Jonathan Hausman for some concluding remarks. Victoria, Marzi, and John. I just addressed a bunch of questions with people asking great questions. How are we going to do it? Who's going to do it? When's it going to happen? Under whose authority? From your perspective, each of us collectively and with others have had this conversation enough. What are some of the things that you see that need to happen now in order to make this happen?
I have talked to small Christian organizations, large Christian organizations throughout the war about this, and I think Christians are intuitively, Bible-believing evangelical Christians are intuitively, they get this. They understand this is the only solution. It's the only one that can truly change hearts. And it starts by showing true love with giving aid and help and also education. They are ready to go. I know people who are willing to go, organizations that are willing to sign up who do love Israel, who are willing to go in and help children, to comfort widows, to provide medical aid, all that kind of stuff right now, if the IDF or Israel as the overall authority would allow them. So the next step to me is this idea that we have has to be something that's at least allowed by Israel, if not encouraged by Israel, or even that this is the policy that we want to give this responsibility to these organizations and this community, because we understand this is the only feasible option. And I think your think tank, Jonathan, is so important. Your organization that you've started with, the Solution for Peace in Gaza, is so important because you are an Israeli Orthodox Jew living in Israel who is able to publish something like this and be an invitation, a pitch to the powers that be to accept this, because it's the truth.
The restoration of Jewish sovereignty in the land of Israel was an earth-shattering event. For Christians, it was a confirmation that God always keeps his covenantal promises. Today, we are blessed to see God's fingerprints in the modern miracle of the land of Israel playing out in our lives among the people and in the state of Israel. This year, on the occasion of Israel's 75th anniversary, the Genesis 123 Foundation has been privileged to bring together 75 Christian leaders from around the world to lend their unique voices, sharing their personal faith experiences relating to Israel and their in-depth insight into Israel's history and spiritual significance, creating an historical, one-of-a-kind, high-end coffee table book, Israel the Miracle. Israel the Miracle's stunning imagery will fill your home with the hope of fulfilled promises and conversations about Israel. It's a perfect gift to anyone for any occasion, and most of all, to yourself. You'll also be a blessing to Israel, knowing that the proceeds will go to bless Israelis of all backgrounds. Be a part of Israel the Miracle and bring the land, the people, and the state of Israel into your heart and into your home. Visit israelthemiracle.com to get your limited edition copy today.
Thank you. Marcy, Victoria, what needs to happen to make this happen?
I'll go. Well, I have to agree that, you know, first of all, this is a supernatural event. This is from the divine. And so that has to be there first. Otherwise, it's going to fall flat. It's got to be a part of the Lord's plan. And I believe that it is. It's sitting really well with a lot of people, Christians and Jews, that God needs to be in the forefront and directing this, orchestrating it. I know that there are a lot of Christians, excuse me, there are a lot of Arabs that don't like Christians either. They hate Christians as much as they hate the Jews. And so we do have that factor to think about. And I know that those who are called, like you said, they go into the most dangerous places in the world. And but that is their heart to go and to do what God has called them to do, and that is to teach the love of Yeshua and bring them over into light, into love, out of hate, out of this ideology. So there is a very supernatural connection with that, and that people trust in that. And so, yeah, if you don't feel like you're supposed to go, then no, you don't go. You have to have that peace from the Lord that you're going to be one of those. I believe that as far as, is it all Christians? No. You know, there are a lot of Christians that don't agree with the political aspects of Israel and side more with the Palestinian side. So, yeah, there's going to be some polarization, I think, in Christianity. There already is in that regard. So it's those who God has really connected to their heart, brought them into that Zionist relationship where they feel like they are part of the Holy Zion and the Zion that is coming, where Christians and Jews will be one and the same because we're all going to be a part of God's kingdom, his family. And I believe that the evangelicals who have just that heart to this is a part of who they are and what they do. They evangelize. And so there's going to be, I think, different divisions. It's not going to be just a clear-cut answer, and it's going to be tricky. But I believe that, you know, we'll be guided supernaturally to do so.
Tricky will be the key word coming out of this conversation today. Marzi, you were just here. You got more experience than any of us. Living among Muslims and speaking about your faith and doing so with love and kindness. What needs to happen to make this happen?
Jonathan, as I mentioned earlier, we know that this is a very big project. And as I mentioned, we need to have a strategy. And I mentioned to you, we need to have the board of experts in each area to know how to approach these people. Besides evangelizing, through my experience living in Iran, I learned that because for many years, radical Muslims brainwashed these people with lies. And these people need to understand that the source of their misery, their issues is Islam is not, is those radical Muslims, Hamas terrorists, not Israel, not America. This is what most Iranians understood it, praise God, after so many years, they understood that the source of their issue is the Islamic Republic regime, not America, not Israel. That's the truth that we need to teach these people. And then definitely building the friendship with these people, approaching people with the message of love, showing our sympathy, especially at, during this time that they are homeless. They need our love. When you and I, you and me have a meeting with one of those Jewish people in Gaza border, which when I asked him a question, that his answer got my attention. I asked him, what do you need? And he said, what was his answer? He said, love. And I was thinking about that, that how we are supposed to show our love to Jewish people and now to Palestinians. It's not just to tell them that we love you. There should be, through our action, to show them that we love them, we care about them. When I was evangelizing many Iranians in Iran, it wasn't just like to go to many of them and just tell them that, okay, Jesus is the truth, everyone needs to convert to Christianity. No, we need to show our love and compassion to people to build that friendship. For example, another story, quick story I can share, when I was in prison, they were arresting hundreds of people and prisons were packed. And one prisoner, she shared with me, she didn't know, she and her family didn't know about Jesus. And that was so interesting to me that she shared that because they arrested, they beaten her brother in the streets and she tried to defend him and they arrested her, put her in prison. But she said, my father, when we went to the court, my father told to the judge that, you know what, as soon as my daughter gets released, I'm going to take her to a church to make her a Christian. You don't want Islam anymore. So this is very important for people to understand what is the source of their problem, the source of their misery. And I think this is happening in Iran. And my hope and prayer is that God opened the eyes of Palestinians, and then we can go inside and show the love of God to these people through our action, not just, you know, telling them we love you. We need to show this through our action.
Amazing. Thank you. You know, I should have included this at the beginning. One of the reasons you're here, Marzi, and we're having this conversation is because I think everyone who's part of this conversation agrees and understands that in order to go in to Gaza and really transform with that de-radicalization, that's the big thing that's going to be harder than the demilitarization. It requires I don't want to pick any denomination, but blank denomination, you can fill in the blank, of people standing on street corners in Gaza holding Bibles and saying in Arabic, Jesus loves you. I think it's got to be much bigger than that. And it has to be people, including people like you, Marzi, who have either grown up under Islamic societies and know how to relate to Muslims or Arab Christians or people, Arabs who have converted to Christianity. So your experiences are not just unique and valid, but also I think will be pivotal to this.
Jonathan, one more thing that I wanted to mention, you know that my story, my mission in Iran, part of my mission with my friend was distributing Bibles. Because we knew that the government never allowed people to have access to Bible. You can't find Bible in any bookstores. And God showed us that we need to distribute Bibles and let people to read the truth, true Bible. And we did that. We distributed 20,000 Bibles in Tehran, a few other cities. And I have amazing stories that later God showed us that through one Bible, the whole family came to Christ and gave their heart to Jesus. So this is another thing that we definitely need to make sure that Palestinians to read the Bible, to read the truth beside. And after that, we can go and show our love to these people.
Okay. Thank you for that. I do want to state just to full disclosure, John, you've dubbed me as having a think tank, perhaps. It is that, but this plan is not overtly specifically and publicly for the evangelizing of 2 million Gazans, but rather, as we say, to truly restore and rehabilitate Gaza and Gazans. And again, I'll go back to part of my answer to Victoria's question. Why? Why do I think so? Because I don't think there's a better answer. Because you Christians, by showing your love, showing the love of Jesus in Gaza, where Allah and Islam have failed them, that is, if I may borrow my phrase, the solution for peace in Gaza. And therefore, everyone go to solutionforpeaceingaza.com. Before I introduce Rabbi Jonathan Hausman, I just want to share a comment that that because this is going public, I won't say her name, but a woman who I met a few years ago in Nashville on a Shabbat afternoon, having a very intense conversation. She's a Palestinian Arab. Forgive me if I'm misrepresenting some of the story, but a convert to Christianity as well, coming from a family that's, if I remember correctly, reasonably high up. And I asked if she would want to come on and make some comments. And maybe this is part of the challenges that we're going to have for security issues for herself, for her family. We're electing not to, but I do want to read what she wrote with her permission. She writes, "I know firsthand that Yeshua has the power to radically transform the hardest of hearts. Love is patient, kind, doesn't envy or boast. It isn't proud. When the people of Gaza hear about the Lord who says, 'Lay your life down, love your enemy, pray for those who persecute you,' they will encounter radical love. They will change. They will respond. This is a spiritual battle indeed, and must be fought in spirit and in truth at the core. Abraham cried out for Ishmael and Isaac. The Lord will reunite his family. He loves Abraham and is faithful to his word. They reunited in the death of Abraham and will reunite again because God is faithful. Muslims have an orphan spirit and must know that they are being called back into the family. How will they know if no one tells them? Through love, service, care, and discipleship." And then apologizing for not speaking live. But I think that's a tremendous way to kind of, again, with the very first hand and how we just left off the conversation with Marzi. Daniel and Carol, you asked about where this will be available. There will be a link on YouTube. I will share this. I will share, again, solutionforpeaceingaza.com. The link to my article, and with instructions that I hope, is it total inappropriate for me to say that you should all go out and make disciples? I don't know. I guess there was an Orthodox Jew who said that before, so I'll borrow it. With that, I want to introduce a friend and co-conspirator, someone whose counsel I always, always appreciate, especially when it's 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, Rabbi Jonathan Hausman. You know, normally we do these conversations where I bring a Christian on to pray at the end. And I thought, you know, the Jews on this conversation have had a minority voice. So I wanted to bring a real solid rabbi who also loves and builds bridges with Christians. Rabbi Hausman, first, any comments, observations? It's a fascinating conversation that we had. And then if you would close us in prayer.
Well, listen, I have to be honest, Jonathan. I did log on a bit late, so I wasn't able to hear everything. So I don't know if I can really make an intelligent observation about the entire hour plus. I will say this, as somebody who is a fluent Arabic speaker, and as somebody who went to college in Egypt and knows that culture inside and out, this is a tall order. Only if it would be so easy to go onto a street corner and literally say, "Messiah, Messiah," it would be wonderful. But that's just not the way the world is, and that's just not the culture we're dealing with, unfortunately. And I'll be glad to speak to anybody offline about that further. I was gonna bring this to a close in one fashion, but I have to be honest with you. I just finished putting together a few notes for my Shabbat Torah teaching, and I think I want to move over to that. There's an interesting word that appears in this Shabbat's, this Saturday's Torah reading. We begin reading Sefer Devarim. We begin reading the book of Deuteronomy, for those of you who are not Jewish and don't read Hebrew. And right at the beginning of the second Aliyah, there's a word that occurs. The first time it occurs like this in all of Bible, it's Echa. Ow. Now, you need to understand it's a four-letter word. It always poses a question. It appears in that form 18 times in all of Tanakh, 18 times in all of the Jewish Bible. And every time Echa occurs, I mean, we'll read it in the Torah reading this coming Saturday. It's part of the Haftarah, the prophetic reading. There are 16 of the Book of Lamentations, which we will read on Tisha B'Av this coming Monday evening. Each chapter starts with Echa. And there are other times it occurs. And every time it occurs, it leads into a question about sorrow. Why? How could it be that we are facing such challenges, that we are enduring such sorrow now? Why is this happening to us now? But everybody seems to, well, I shouldn't say everybody, many people seem to forget that there is actually a 19th time where this word occurs. And I should actually say that the Shorish, the root letters, actually occur in this order. In Hebrew, the word is spelled Aleph, Yod, Chaf, He. The 19th time happens to be in the book of Genesis, and say for Breshit, and the Parshas known as Breshit, where you have Adam and Eve, who have already done their deed, and they hear God rustling in Gan Eden. And we literally read, Vayikra Hashem Elohim et Adam, Vayomer lo Ayeka. God literally calls out to man and says, Ayeka, where are you? Where are you? And it means that it's not a time to hide away. It's not a time to shy away from difficult tasks. It's not a time to closet responsibilities. The Hebrew word for responsibilities, achrayut, and it comes from the chorish, the Hebrew root, achar, meaning after. And it really indicates that our responsibility to anything must be with a sense of responsibility. Our response to anything and to everything must be with a sense of responsibility. You know, we're at a time right now in the aftermath of something so horrific. The Jewish people haven't seen this in 80 years. And for some of us who are of my age, remember our grandparents talking about leaving, in my case, Eastern Europe, and the pogroms from which they suffered. And that's what we witnessed this past Shmini Atzeret. This is what we witnessed. This was a pogrom perpetrated in 2023. And in the aftermath of something this horrid that has happened to us, instead of caving into the pressure and asking Ayeka, we need to ask ourselves Ayeka.
Well,
where are we? At what point do we find ourselves? What are we going to do about this situation? And how will we respond constructively and proactively? And I really think that, Jonathan, from what I heard, and I caught 45 minutes of the presentations before you got to me, I really think that's what we're hearing, how to deal with a situation that's seemingly intractable, and how to respond in some kind of way that can move us forward. There can be many, many different permutations offered for that way forward, this is just one of them. And really, our prayer has to be that those who were involved with this are successful, such that we can recite at the end. You know, we Jews are a people of blessing. We're supposed to recite 100 blessings a day. They are formulaic. This one would be, I think, that if this is successful, we will be dealing with outstanding scholars in our era. And this goes for, this is recited for a secular purpose. Baruch ata Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam, shenatan mikvodo levasar badam. Blessed are you, Lord, our God, King of the universe, who has given of his glory to human beings.
Amen.
Rabbi, you have just become the chief rabbi of Solution for Peace in Gaza.com. Thank you for that. Victoria, John, Marzi, I'm sorry we don't have another few hours. And for those who also can be and should be and will be part of this conversation, it's the beginning. And what a great message to end. Thank you, everybody. You will be getting your marching orders and a subsequent email with all of the links and follow up. And really grateful. Please, God, we will see this happen soon.
If you stay with us this long, then you know by now, at the end of every episode, we give out a special gift. From almost the very beginning of this podcast, we offer this special gift. We call it From Jonathan's Bookshelf. All we ask is that you do is follow and like Inspiration from Zion on all of our social media. And when you comment and share the link to this program, we select one person at random each month. Each month, we've been offering a different book in the past, but today, this month, as we've been doing since last fall, we're offering a special copy of our own book, Israel the Miracle. Israel the Miracle is an incredible volume you're going to want to have in your home to bless you and your families, and it's a $75 value that we're going to offer you for free. So please follow and like and share and comment on the link to this. We're always grateful that this podcast is sponsored by our friends at the Willow Run Greenhouse in Culpeper, Virginia. If you're ever in the area, please pop in and thank them for helping make conversations like this possible. And also, special thanks for the Coyne family for their meaningful sponsorship. Inspiration from Zion and the Genesis 1-3 programs are all made possible by donations. So please consider joining us to help continue the dialogue and build bridges. If you'd like to sponsor a future episode in honor or memory of a loved one or special occasion, please be in touch at inspirationfromzion@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your comments as well, always as part of a dialogue, and invite you to send any questions, especially questions you have about traditional Judaism for our Ask the Rabbi programs. Please share this with others who also find it of interest and continue to join us right here as we bring you more meaningful conversations about unique topics relating to Israel that you won't hear anywhere else. Wherever you are in the world, I pray that you and your loved ones are all safe and healthy, and I send my blessings from right here in the Judean Mountains. God bless you. Hallelujah.